right, welcome back. It's been technically about 45 days since the last one, but we had a special Primordium excerpt read by Mr. Tim Dadabo in January, so definitely kept your ear holes full during that month. We're back for a very special February edition of the 343 Sparkcast. Of course, I'm David Ellis, and once again, I'm joined by Franchise Development Director Frank O'Connor.
Hello.
So seeing as this is our February episode, we decided to have two very special guests. Joining Frank and I this week is Josh Holmes, Studio Creative Director here at 343.
Hi.
And rounding it out is Kiki Wolfkill, Executive Producer on Halo 4.
Hello.
And Frank is playing with my mixing board, and
I'm just touching the hole.
Frightened. Danger.
I'm just pressing Danger. Your holes. There's all these holes.
Not going to touch that one. We're starting
I already
on a,
touched them all.
Oh,
we're good.
Goodness.
We're starting on a good tech. Exactly.
Bird.
But well, the reason we kind of wanted to bring everyone together, it's actually been a while, I think, since a lot of people have heard from Josh and Kiki. I think the last time a lot of people might have seen you both was at the Halo Fest, at the Halo 4 panel, which, thank goodness, that turned out pretty good. We were all really nervous walking into that that day.
Yeah.
So what's the team been up to since, I guess that was late August, early September? I mean, the Halo 4 team's been pretty busy since then. Of course, the studio launched Halo Anniversary, and that was definitely a big deal with the publishing team, other folks internally that worked on it. But meanwhile, Frank continues to hit buttons. I am frightened. You may or may not hear anything the entire episode. We'll see. Halo 4 team's been busy since then. What's the studio been up to?
We've been up to a lot. You know, the team's been working really hard. We had a huge milestone that we pushed towards at the end of the year last year that was really around taking one of our missions to a near complete state, which was really exciting to see everything come together and sort of play through a campaign experience that feels, you know, near shippable quality. And then and we've done a ton of work on the multiplayer side, and we're pushing towards a pretty important milestone there right now as a team.
Well, we're not, because we're up here doing this podcast.
That's right,
while everybody else is downstairs playing it. Which,
in fact, you might hear some cheering at some point, because it's not far from here where people are playing right now.
That's true.
It's actually been funny. On the last podcast we did in late December, Allison Stroll was on, and she actually talked a little bit about, you know, our daily multiplayer playtest with the multiplayer team is usually like about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and there one afternoon just this loud cheer erupted, and Allison had to run out and figure out what was going on. Of course, we were teasing about a little bit what it was, but smack talk happens regularly. I mean, sometimes I'm playing from my desk, which is around the corner from them, and I'll just hear someone just yell "F you, David Ellis," because I'll grab a weapon or something and
That's
kill
usually
someone.
Usually me.
Exploit it as much as possible at this point.
You're a horrible human being.
I'm pretty sure the cheer was the multiplayer team shooting me in the face. The daily cheer that goes up around 3:40.
That was used as bait to get
it
people
was.
To make sure they all participated.
Yes.
That's actually been really fun, though. Outside of the regular playtest that certain teams are doing daily, very recently we've been doing studio-wide playtests in the afternoon as we move towards this milestone. That's actually been a lot of fun, of actually going in there and playing against people you don't normally play against and actually being surprised, pleasantly surprised. The other day I was playing in a match and Tajin was playing. And I thought, audio guy, this is going to be easy, because there was one a couple nights ago I was playing against one of the other audio guys.
I can't believe you.
You know, you might have to ask him for help with this podcast.
He was audio not, people.
But yes. there was another audio guy, and he was just standing in a corner shooting at walls. And I was like, oh my God, who is this guy? And I just run up and kill him. And next day he's like, why did you do that? I was testing to make sure the sound was working.
You've built a strong reputation around here, Mr. Ellis.
Never let your guard down.
The thing with Tajin, though, he's shockingly good.
Yes.
Yeah. First time we encountered one another, he killed me. I was convinced someone else was playing using his tag, but
he's gotten a lot better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's actually been a lot of fun, having everyone involved with that. Is, of course, do we want to talk any more about what the milestone is?
Well, I mean, since we're talking about Tajin, I just kind of want to follow up on the little mini documentary we put out last week with the audio recording session. It was amazing how much people took out of that. Like, they decided what weapons were working. I was reading MLG Pro had like people arguing about whether that meant that a three-shot burst weapon was hit scan versus not. And I'm like, Tajin also pointed out he recorded the sound of like a Tasmanian devil screaming, but right. Nobody seems to care if there's bloom on that or not. So it was just really weird. I mean, people do that, but you know, I talked to Jessica about like all the hot button words in the,
oh, yeah.
in the update. And yeah, it's fun to see people just speculate, but
I swear those guys have the best job because they basically get to go from place to place, recording awesome sounds, blowing shit up.
Yeah.
Hanging out with special forces. Yeah. Like, yeah.
Well, people sort of got a taste of that at the Halo Fest. We showed the one video of them just blowing stuff up.
Yeah.
But there was another video that we haven't shown. We may eventually show some, but where they actually went to Tasmania and were recording those sounds. And it's just, it looked like it's equal parts a great time and absolutely horrific. Because there's certain animals that they have to like coax out with raw meat. So they'll come out and make noises.
Yes, there's a reason they're called devils, and we all know far too much now about Tasmanian devils.
Yeah, I had no idea with the facial skin cancer thing.
Oh, yeah.
Very
yeah.
sad.
It is sad.
You're expecting to see to see the Tasmanian devil and them spinning around.
Spinning exactly. around yeah, and no. eating around. Stuff.
It's not the case.
You know,
yeah,
cartoons lied to me.
Yeah. Well, except if there had been a honey badger cartoon, we'd have been still been pretty much okay at this point.
You know, I didn't actually see the honey badger video for the first time until like six what? Weeks ago. I don't know how I avoided it, not consciously, but I was out with some friends and I was like, I got to stop you. I actually absolutely, I sort of nod my head politely and act like I'm laughing, but I didn't know what it was until recently.
You're like somebody's Facebook mom.
I was.
Get thee out of your podcast cave.
But it was like surprising because normally after you hear people like make like laughing about it, it doesn't sound like it's going to be that funny, but... It actually is. There's a reason it's been a popular meme. So do we want to talk any more about the milestone we're pushing towards? People might be interested in that.
Yeah. Go right ahead, executive producer Kiki Wolfgill.
So it's been 6 months since Halo Fest, which honestly feels like 2 years. But beyond the milestone that Josh mentioned hitting at the end of the year, we're obviously pushing for a big multiplayer-focused milestone right now. And it finally feels like all of the component pieces the team's been working on are really coming together, and the fact that we can play together has been just an awesome experience for the team.
Yeah, I mean, we're now not just doing the daily playtests, we're doing take-home playtests throughout the week, which is awesome to be able to play the game from the comfort of your own home and kill people.
That's been especially it's been especially fun because it's one thing playing on your monitor by your desk, but actually playing it on your TV at home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You really get a sense for,
and that moment you sort of, as a game developer, that moment when you transition from this is the thing that I'm working on and I'm looking at figuring out what's going wrong here, what that bug is, to I'm just playing and having
fun
is a pretty magical turning point.
And the, I mean, the not to oversell it, but the level of polish on the graphics even at this point is, I mean, my wife came in and she's like, "Ooh, what is that?" And it was a very specific level. I mean, she would not care about a typical Halo level, but you probably know which multiplayer level my wife would think was pretty. And she's like, "Oh, what's that?" And I'm like, "Get out, it's a secret. Get out
not allowed room. Here."
Yeah.
See, I didn't even let my husband.
Yeah. Well, I didn't let my wife. I said, told my wife, I do actually like separate that stuff. I'm like, I'm working on something secret tonight in this little dark room. So if you hear any weird noises or grunting or yelling,
it's just skeptical.
Dark. It's don't even sweat it. It's fine. It's just secret work.
She was quite skeptical of that.
It's funny.
Maybe she was talking about me when she came and said, "Oh, what's that?"
Probably wasn't.
No. It was probably the graphics.
It's funny you mentioned that it was just 6 months, feels like 2 years ago. But you talk about the studio as a whole. I remember when I started here, it's almost been 2 years actually. There's only like 40 or 50 people in the entire studio. And it's just amazing to see how it's grown since then. I think we're, 200, 250 people at this point, maybe even a little bit more than that. Depends on, actually, by the time you hear this, it probably definitely will be more than that.
Yeah.
We continue to add people because we're in full production mode right now. For a lot of people that may not know the difference between like pre-production and full production, can you guys talk a little bit about, what that process is like once we shift it over and kind of what the experience is going to be like in, over the next, several months as we continue to actually work on the game and actually finish it up for this year?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of cool and interesting, I think. I'm a game developer. The different phases that you go through when you're building a game. So, I mean, you kind of start out in an early concept phase where you're trying to figure out generally what it is that you want to build. And then you go into focused pre-production, and the goal there is to really flesh out in more detail exactly what it is you want to build at the same time as building a lot of the kind of tools and foundation that is going to be required to accomplish that, and start to prove out a lot of the things through prototype that, you know, you're going to place your bets on within the game experience. And then by the time you get into production, at that point, you've kind of proven out, yes, this is what we want to build. This is how we're going to build it. We believe this is going to work. These are the key bets. And you're just essentially doing the really hard work of now executing and bringing that all together. And then as you go through that last year of building a game, it's really about polishing and, you know, trying to get every last detail that you can possibly get into the experience to make sure that you're delivering on all of your creative goals.
Yeah, and it's definitely the point at which, I mean, every day you're making really hard decisions around what's going to ensure the best quality experience possible. So you're trying to get more done than you can realistically fit in. You're trying to make the right decisions that end up with the best user experience. And those types of decisions are different every single day and for every part of the group. And sometimes they're creative decisions, sometimes they're production decisions, but it's really an interesting time in terms of the lens you need to use to really understand what we need to end up with and how we get there.
It's funny you mentioned kind of these features kind of come online. There was one recently, and I won't even come close to going into specifics on it, but a specific character feature that came online that it was actually really cool because you'd heard people talk about it for like months and months and months, and actually seeing it in action for the first time. I was talking to some of the designers, and they were really excited about seeing what they could do with that in the future.
Crotch isn't that secret. The Chiefs cod piece is out there.
But, you know, things like that are interesting because you kind of wait with bated breath. You put a lot of risk into this feature you really feel strongly about. It's difficult to execute on, and you're not entirely sure what the end result is going to be. And certainly, I think we're all really relieved that the end result is something we're really excited about. But there's definitely been a lot of sort of anxiety and tension.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the things we knew we were kind of biting off when we decided to take, you know, risks with what we wanted to build with Halo 4, because we wanted to kind of push in new directions and do new things that you hadn't seen before in a Halo game. But doing that, you know, that means sort of uncharted territory. And so there were a lot of things that we kind of sort of put up there as things that we wanted to do that we had to then go through the process of proving them out and seeing them all come together. And we're at that really magical time when things are now all sort of fitting into place and you can see the big picture come together.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because, Frank, you've talked about this a little bit before. I mean, you know, it's certainly not polished, but, I mean, it's at a point where you can play through basically the entire campaign right now. And, you know, always doing testing on that and figuring out how stuff works. But, you know, certainly if someone hadn't seen a game at this point and you're like, you can play all the way through, why don't you just release it next week? Yeah. It's a little bit more complicated than that because there's a lot of places with temporary graphics and things like that. And we're always, you know, testing internally, and, you know, the Microsoft's research and user research team has been amazing. And it's always interesting to read through that stuff and see and kind of learn how people actually play games, because they don't really think about it when you're playing it. You're just experiencing it.
Yeah, no, it's a fascinating science, really. And just being able to assess the usability of different concepts that you're putting into the game. Like, are people understanding it the way you thought that they would understand it? And sometimes it's really simple tweaks and changes that make a massive difference in the play experience. And so having the facility to be able to bring in gamers from outside, Halo fans, non-Halo fans, from across a spectrum of gamers, and have them sit down and get hands-on with the experience and then give us valuable feedback has been just a huge boon to us as a development.
And so far, and I might cut this out of the podcast, but so far, no Tom Morello knocking on wood. Thank God.
It's always a French Tom Morello waiting in the wings. I mean, it's been weird for me. I mean, I've worked on every Halo game except one.
Which one was that? No, I'm just kidding. I know what you're talking about.
Well, I can just count anniversary Everton every Halo game. But I guess I went into this thinking it was going to turn out a certain way, and I'm weirdly probably one of the most conservative Halo people in the studio, because you know, Halo should be like this, and this weapon should behave like this, and this feature should be like this. But where I've been really surprised is when I've seen changes that are not necessarily radical. I mean, it'd be difficult to explain it was radical to someone who isn't like that invested in Halo. Mm-hmm. But you suddenly think, why was I so conservative about that? Why did I even care about that? This new thing is better, or this new sort of improvement is vastly better, and so on. So it's a constant surprise for me daily, because I'm so familiar with things. So, you know, I'll still see things that are familiar and they're comfortable and they're safe. But I'm seeing things every day that are new and improved and better and changed and added.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been all my predictions have sort of been thrown out the window at this point, because it's getting to places I just never predicted, and they're all good. So,
yeah, you mentioned Chief's codpiece, so I'm going to make a very inelegant transition into talking a little bit about, and it's something we've talked about, of course, in the Halo Bulletin in recent weeks. But it's always funny when you have schedules for what's going to be shown, what's going to be talked about. You know, the first time we got a look at Master Chief in Halo 4 was last year at E3 and the trailer. And, you know, certainly there have been iterations since then. I know Kenneth talked about it during the panel at Halo Fest. But it's always funny that the next time people really get a good look at him is via a 5.5-6-inch toy model with ball joints on his shoulder, which affect the way his arms look. And, of course, you know, people are passionate about it and they, you know, jump to conclusions, rightfully so sometimes, but jump to conclusions about that. It's always funny how that works as far as, you know, the design of Master Chief. It's such an iconic character. But I don't know. What do you guys think about, you know, the fact that people see it in a toy, but, you know, once eventually they see it in a game, I think it'll make a lot of sense.
It's a superhero, right? You see, yeah, a new Superman costume, and there's nothing but flipping out.
Thank goodness we didn't give Master Chief a mullet like they did with Superman.
I know Superman was a robot, and he was a black guy, yep, and he was like a kid, and
then he came back with a mullet.
Things, so yeah, he has a mullet now.
Yeah, we did not do
Does
that.
Does he have a mullet now?
I don't think so. That was like the mid-90s when kind of a lot of people had a mullet.
Is it as luxurious as Frank's mullet?
It's pretty sweet, but yeah, the Superman's mullet was actually real hair. So
yeah. I see.
My mullet's on the inside.
Mine too, Frank.
but it was I was walking past an artist's monitor the other day, and there was he had the Halo 3 Chief and the Halo 4 Chief actually rotating by side.
That's cool.
I'd love to show people that one day, but it's remarkable how similar they are. There're vast differences on every single piece, but when you look at them both side by side in that context, it's amazing what the fuss is about. You'll see that there's definitely some fiction stuff happening, but that plays way second fiddle to the fact that it's a new artist and new technology, which I'm especially excited about.
Yeah.
In talking about in the future, and new graphics and new industrial design. I mean, you know, if people are flipping out about the Chief, that's going to happen with other objects. It's going to happen, mm-hmm, with other types of industrial design that go into a Halo universe and a Halo game. But I think that it's all going to be super positive.
I mean, that to me is one of the most exciting parts about this. And I speak not just as, you know, obviously a game developer, but also as a Halo fan, is seeing a different perspective taken to the industrial design to a lot of these familiar elements, to me has been just amazing. And I think the team of artists that we have assembled at 343, who are just some of the best in the business, and under Kenneth Scott's art direction, it's just been amazing to see it all come together. And it feels like a natural evolution. Like, I know exactly, mm-hmm, what you're talking about, yeah, with Chief. When you look at the two models side by side, it feels like a natural evolution. It feels like the approach that's been taken, which has been to really focus on the function of his suit.
Yeah.
To me, it just makes sense. But I totally understand, because fans are so passionate,
right,
about this character, yeah, and this universe, that, you know, every change is going to be scrutinized, yeah, and debated.
And the funny thing is, there'll be plenty of places and ways to see the Master Chief in the engine. But the reality is that you're mostly first person.
Mm-hmm.
But the funny thing is, our first person model often reflects some of those changes in a really interesting, positive way. Like, Kiki was watching me shoot myself in the foot literally, mm-hmm, earlier today, and like doing melees and stuff, and you see how the joints work and how the gaps in the armor function as properly functioning physical pieces. And it, that combined with the audio is...
So after that sort of abrupt transition there, you may be wondering what exactly happened. So
it's Frank's fault.
Yeah, we had some mishaps. Frank, if you remember from the beginning of the podcast, Frank was playing with my mixing board and he hit something. I think he hit his head and passed out. So he's actually not with us anymore.
He's pretty much
down on the floor at our feet.
Yeah, yeah. Completely passed out. It's really
snoring like a lazy Scotsman.
It's really a sad sight. But it's actually unfortunate a little bit that no one will ever hear the lost podcast.
No, we were recording for like 2.5 hours.
Yeah, we were here till like 8 o'clock.
It was amazing.
Yeah, it kind of was magic.
And it was magic.
Unfortunately, we're not going to be able to recapture it quite like it was.
I mean, probably not.
Yeah, but
I took pictures because it was
that
it
doesn't
was such
help.
A magical
there were tears.
Experience.
I mean, yeah. I still see them on the microphone.
Where, man tears.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's true. it might have been the man tears that shorted out this mixing board. I'm not exactly sure. But we did want to come back and wrap things up, not to leave you in a Halo 2 style ending there with the podcast. But, and I actually remembered what we were talking about. So we'll sort of kind of go into the same thing. Frank was talking about some of the stuff in the game being able to, he was playing around shooting himself in the leg and kind of talking about, you know, in some kind of general terms, things we're doing in the game to sort of physicalize. That's probably not even an actual word, but kind of make you
think
feel.
Frank's passed out.
Yeah,
I
think it's
you.
Catching now. But make you feel like you're actually more than just a camera on a stick. You know, that's why Frank actually plays inverted, because he actually feels kind of like he's flying versus whatever. I think it's because he's sick in the head. No offense to people who play inverted. But then we kind of transition into what we were talking about architecturally and from an art perspective of kind of bringing a new vision to both the aesthetic of you know, the Chief's armor, but also the world and things you're going to encounter. One of the elements that we've kind of done that with is the music. And people got a sense of that at Halo Fest last year at the Halo 4 panel with the music and the fantastic concept art trailer that kind of gave a sense visually, but also from an auditory standpoint of kind of the direction we're taking things. And I know both of you have been listening to some recent music drops.
Yes.
I wonder if you had some things to share, since we unfortunately will not have an audio clip, music clip that we can't end with unless one of these two gives me permission here on the air. But I don't think we're quite ready
to
share some of
that
stuff.
I don't think Eugene will let us do that, unfortunately.
Josh, you could hum a little bit.
You don't really want that. Trust me. Yeah, no, the music is amazing. It's been a pretty incredible journey to get to this point because, you know, in the beginning, we really started very, very broad and explored a lot of different directions under Tijin's guidance. And now, you know, we're listening to some of the new tracks just over the last week. And, it's really found its own kind of unique direction that feels very much Halo, but yet very different, very fresh, and very appropriate to the game that we're making. Yeah. So I don't know if you want to add to that.
Yeah. Quickly. Yeah. I mean, we were actually playing a track, must've been hours ago now. on the studio speakers, and it was a recent track that I actually hadn't heard before. And to sort of hear the journey that the music itself has taken over the last 6 months is really interesting, because, you know, to Josh's point, the early pieces were very exploratory. Mm-hmm. And the piece that we just listened to was so inspiring and so confident and so grounded in Halo, while at the same time really being something that sounds very different from anything we've had in the Halo games before. So it's really exciting to start to hear a Halo voice come through that we just haven't heard before.
I think that's actually a really good way to put it. You talked about some of the earlier exploratory audio stuff. If you actually were to put it side by side with what we're getting now, it actually would in some ways sound very different. yet thematically there is this this familiarity that is not the same but feels familiar. And I think we're really lucky to have a pretty amazing composer. And during the section that we actually lost earlier, I remember Frank was talking about when you all were first meeting with this composer and kind of talking it over. It was very important that he kind of brought his own voice. There's no reason to try to copy what Marty's done. He's done amazing, amazing music that, you know, millions of people remember, you know, for 10 plus years now. And yeah. So it just wouldn't make sense to try to do the same thing. And, you know, we're tackling new themes, new locations, new characters in this trilogy. And I think this music just sort of reinforces it quite a bit. There's one theme in particular that's just beautiful. It's really fantastic to see how it's evolved.
Yeah, I mean, I have been a fan of Marty's music since the very beginning. He's just an incredible artist. And when we started working with our composer on this game, you know, he was very complimentary of all of the work that Marty had done. But yeah, he just exactly what you said. He said, you know, I need to bring my own unique voice to this and my own vision to the work that we create that will be, you know, will honor the themes that Marty has established, but it won't directly mimic them or copy them. And that's when we went into this amazing exploratory phase, and what we've managed to come up with it's really inspiring.
And it's been interesting because through that whole process, and there's just been so much music that's been created for this game.
Yeah.
And a lot of it that, you know, probably no one will ever hear, most likely, just because as part of like the development process, like, you know, dozens and dozens of music tracks are just kind of created in some cases fairly quickly just to try to get ideas.
Yeah, and in a lot of cases, it starts with just a simple sketch, and many of those tracks are incredible in and of themselves, but just for whatever reason are not appropriate to the game that we're making. But it is it's a really fun process to go through, especially if you're a music lover, to be able to hear all of these incredibly diverse, different approaches that have been taken to different tracks through that process. So I know for us, it's one of the favorite things that I get to do on my schedule is the music review and go and see like what's the latest stuff that Tajin and his team have been working on with our composer, and listening to those tracks is one of the best parts of my week.
And I think at this point, everyone listening at home is just yelling at whatever
play
they're
something.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure as the year goes on, as we get closer to launch, there'll be opportunities to share kind of snippets here and there with the listeners. And of course, we're happy to do that.
I mean, sharing our composer and sharing the musical vision for Halo 4 is a really, really important and momentous thing. And so we're saving it for the right moment in time, but we're all, you know, anxiously awaiting that moment that we can finally pull back the curtain and reveal that. So understand that the fans are probably feeling that same level of
I know everyone at excitement. This point, I saw someone made a post that it was exactly 6 months since there had been any Halo 4 news.
Oh, goodness.
So we certainly can understand the excitement, and which can sometimes bleed over into frustration, but trust us when we tell you that the wait will absolutely be worth it. I'm confident of that. And I think on that note, we may sort of wrap it up. Frank is starting to smell a little bit,
he
quite
is.
Honestly.
Yeah. More than usual.
Yeah. I don't know that we can take it too much longer, but, you know, February is the shortest month of the year. So this episode is a little bit shorter than sometimes normal, but we hope you had some good stuff in there that you might have enjoyed. And I think Josh and Kiki, maybe we'll have you back in March. I think that might make a lot of sense.
Awesome.
Yeah, I think, you know, in March we should have some interesting stuff to share, so.
Yeah, and I think with that tease, we'll kind of wrap it up real quick. Before we do, just want to remind everyone, and, you know, I want to thank everyone for listening to the podcast every month. Everyone who subscribes, whether it's on iTunes or Zune or just through the RSS feed, or even if you just come to Waypoint or through your mobile app, we really appreciate everyone who listens to the podcast. If you can do us a favor, however you get the podcast, please write reviews. It helps out with definitely visibility with the podcast. And of course, you know, feel free to share it with a friend because it's a good opportunity for us to kind of talk directly to you guys. And I think that's super useful. You know, as we go through the year, we'll definitely have more people from the studio on to kind of share what they do for in a day-to-day and kind of share what life is like at 343. So until then, thanks everyone for listening, and see you later.